You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Now it's time for our weekly catch-up with the Labour Party's Carmel Cipollone.
As the Youth Parliament is set to take place this week, a number of youth MPs have spoken out, claiming they have been asked to change or remove elements of their speeches which criticise certain political figures or current topics like environmental action, pay equity and the Treaty Principles Bill. Youth organisation Gen Z Aotearoa founder Nate Wilborn was asked to edit parts of his speech, calling out Ministers Shane Jones, Tama Pōtaka and Penny Simmons on their role in environmental destruction. He said, "When your voices are edited to remove criticism, when ministers are shielded from being named, when we're told that our lived experiences are too political, that is not neutrality, that is protection of the status quo." As well, this week, on July 1st, a number of changes came into effect, including the government's KiwiSaver contributions and eligibility, the rate in payments for sole parents and through ACC, healthy home standards, and procedures for receiving the job seeker benefit. For our weekly catch-up with the Labour Party, I asked Deputy Leader Carmel Cipollone about both of these topics. Here is that interview. This week in the Youth Parliament, there have been claims that the youth MPs are being censored in what they can say and have been told to soften their language, to drop key parts of their speech, and to avoid criticising certain ministers or policies. How do you respond to these accusations?
Oh, this is hugely embarrassing for the government. We haven't seen this before during the time that we've had, that I've been in, certainly with Youth Parliament, where they try to censor the youth MPs and tell them what they can or can't say. I think that they're just scared of criticism, and I think that they realise it's probably not just the youth MPs in opposition parties that disagree with some of what they've done, but even their own youth MPs, I think, have the potential to be quite critical of the government's policies.
Do you think it's fair or at all useful for the youth parliament to be diluted to be more politically neutral or maintain the status quo?
No, not at all. In fact, I think it was silly that they said something along the lines of wanting to take the politics out of it. I mean, these young people have signed up to be youth MPs because they want to have a voice in politics. So we shouldn't have a government that are then diluting their ability to be able to share their views of the world. Right now, we probably need their views on what's happening in the world, to be honest. And I think that we should give the rangatahi some space to talk and take the time to listen.
In addition to the stipulation of changes for certain topics and speeches, how do you think the shift of approach to no longer live streaming the event reflects the government's commitment to platforming young people's political opinions?
Well, it shows they don't have a commitment to platforming young people's political opinions. And again, I think it's just fear of criticism. You know, we've got members of parliament in this coalition government who talk about the freedom of speech and people's rights to be able to say what they believe in. And yet we have a government here who are trying to hide those views from the rest of New Zealand because, quite frankly, they're scared that they'll be out of sync with what the coalition political parties think.
Do you think enough is being done generally in New Zealand to foster positive political engagement with young people?
No, I don't. And it's been an enduring problem. We don't have the level of civics education in schools that we need. We don't have the opportunities and spaces where we can very genuinely listen to the voices of rangatahi and take on board their ideas. And so I think there's much more that can be done in this space.
Given the urgency and relevance of issues being brought up in this youth parliament, like climate change, pay equity issues and the Treaty Principles Bill, as well as the clear capacity and willingness these young people have to engage with such topics, are you in favour of the voting age being lowered to 16?
I personally have always been in favour. I feel like it's an age group that is really engaged and really curious and wanting to understand how the world works and how politics impacts them. And so I don't know why, you know, we would shut them out. Personally, I think 16-year-olds should have the opportunity to vote, and I would hope then that would have an impact on their future voting records, because we know that if people vote in their first election, they'll continue to vote throughout their life.
Moving on to my next topic, we've got changes to KiwiSaver contributions this week to a number of benefits, to different payments, as well as the healthy home standards. Are there any changes that have been implemented this week that you're particularly against or, on the other hand, particularly happy with?
Oh, yes, certainly. I mean, we can touch on a couple. One is the changes to superannuation with the government cutting their contribution, cutting it in half for many New Zealanders and cutting it completely to those that earn over $180,000. You know, on one hand, they're saying that we need to take saving seriously and that they want to encourage New Zealanders to save for their retirement. And then on the other hand, they're cutting their own contribution. It seems to be a little bit of a contradiction and not fair on New Zealanders that are paying into the scheme. The government should show that they are committed to the scheme by continuing it, but instead they're cutting the contribution that they make. I think the family boost policy has clearly been a huge embarrassment to the government. Nicola Willis keeps trying to blame the government officials, particularly IRD, but they developed this policy whilst in opposition, and it has not served the thousands of New Zealanders that they said that it would serve, and now they're having to try and tweak it to get the money out the door. It's just embarrassing and not helpful when so many New Zealanders are struggling with the cost of living right now.
What would you say you recommend in terms of altering these kinds of issues to address the cost of living for these groups?
Well, firstly, get it right. You know, we've developed policies in opposition before, and we developed them properly, and we developed them knowing what the implementation would look like, and then we were able to do that when we got it. The families package that we introduced in 2017 when we became our government is a good example of that. Those were developed in opposition and we were able to do them. Right now, people do need reprieve. And, you know, let's reflect on what has been cut. They've lost access to the free public transport for children, half price for young people. People have lost access to the free prescriptions so that when they're sick, they can get access to those. We've lost thousands of jobs across the country, particularly in the construction industry, and particular areas in the country are feeling it more than others, especially Auckland. And so these are the types of things that are not helping with the cost of living challenges that people are facing. And if anything, they've exacerbated those challenges. And the government has to take responsibility for that.
Do you think it's beneficial to the welfare system that the government now requires 6 monthly reviews of job seekers?
No, it's not. And again, this is stuff that the government had information put in front of them on, and so they've been given the advice and they push ahead anyway. What it means is that you have a greater level of compliance in the system, which is much more stressful for those who are struggling to find work and having to rely on support from the state in terms of welfare payments. Keeping in mind, again, I just said, the job market is terrible at the moment, so it's not these people's fault. But also the advice that the government was given was that because of the capacity issues within the Ministry for Social Development, if they keep pushing up the compliance activities like this, 6 monthly reviews, then it will take away the staff's ability to actually provide meaningful support to get into work to our people that are on benefit. And the choice they have made is compliance. And so our frontline staff will be tied up with 6 month reviews and sanctions and all of the punitive stuff and won't actually have the time to support people to get into the employment opportunities that may still be there. And to me, that just seems counterproductive.
Finally, what are your thoughts overall with regard to how these changes respond to the highest priority needs of New Zealanders?
Oh, my thoughts are that they fail. The government on the 1st of July has failed New Zealanders. They've broken promises and they have under-delivered. They came into government during that election campaign saying that they were going to provide relief to New Zealand families who are struggling with the cost of living, and thousands of New Zealand families are not feeling that relief. Many are struggling with the basics, including buying that pound of butter at the supermarket and putting the roof over their head each week. So this government has failed, and I would be giving them a thumbs down for their efforts.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.